Don't you feel like our democracy's not dealing like we used to see?
It's news to me, some choose to be enabling this mockery.
It's human and it's history.
Communication is the key.
Now come on, you can talk to me. So what do we do?
Hello and welcome to So What Do We Do? A podcast about hearing the news and still being calm enough to do something about it.
I'm Storm, a Photoshop troll.
Ooh, I'm Angela M. Weber, and I'm trying to drink a lot of water today. And today's episode is called I Feel That, because we got to get into this empathy thing. We got to get into it, Storm. We got
to. You know, I'm right there with you. It's so hard to be in that spot, but I agree that that's something that is, it's the now of the now. So
yeah, I think when I say we got to do it, I say we're going to talk about it and decide what we all mandate, that what we and all our listeners have to do, because this is binding, and we've all agreed that they have to listen to us, right?
That's correct. There will not be a quiz, but it will be etched upon your bones. Not physically. It's more of a mystical thing. But no, that after it's too late. It's already there. That it will be etched on your bones.
But like a blue glowing.
Correct, and they'll glow in that elvish kind of script, and you'll be like, what the heck is up with my bones? You'll know it's your bones because we've already told you that it is, but it'll look like a mild rash since it's going through all that muscle and fat.
You're welcome. But Storm, you have a very special edition of the news this week, so I think we should get right into that.
Yeah, it's a seriously what the what? It's like a triple take this week. I'm gonna walk through the whole Trump Russia thing.
Yes.
I feel like it's sort of become background, and there all these little things have happened, and the big one that happened this week. And Hank Green did a really great summary of sort of what it's about. So I'm gonna attempt to do something similar. But first, I would like to do just a couple of other really big, what I feel are really big news items that came out this week. And unfortunately, I have to skip over a lot of the others because the review of the Trump Russia is going to take a bit of time.
That's all right.
Cool. So the first one, the headline is Sessions, that is Attorney General Jeff Sessions, directs prosecutors to seek toughest drug charges. Now this has to do with, under the Obama administration and Attorney General Eric Holder, there had been a change in enforcing drug policy. And this came from a broad consensus across both parties, across all law enforcement experts, that it's foolish and not productive to just throw the book at people for minor drug offenses. And when I say minor, you are just in possession of a controlled substance, that you are not actively involved, particularly in violence, in propagating drugs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And what Sessions is saying, and he is the person as the attorney general in charge of the Justice Department, who basically dictates what will be enforced and how it will be enforced. And the reason that this is big news and bad news having to do with dehumanization is that these policies have disproportionately suppressed people of color, that you see the incarceration rates, the big difference that is often cited between, say, being sent to prison for, say, a marijuana or even crack versus the drugs that are not associated with people of color. And prescription drugs, it's treated very differently, and the effect is a dehumanizing one. So that was a big deal that that kind of came and went because of the really big gear stuff that's happening.
Gosh.
Now there's some resistance in this general area.
Oh, good.
Like resistance to this draconian dehumanizing enforcement of laws, in this case, immigration law, that this is kind of, I think, going to be the next big thing that's going to happen in sanctuary cities, and already you're starting to see active resistance. Two headlines. Texas sheriff battles GOP governor over sanctuary city law, where the Texas governor had said, hey, if you're in our state and you're a sanctuary city, we're going to punish you.
Yeah.
But that there is resistance from the cities within Texas. So that's, even on that micro level, down to cities that it's happening. And the second headline, and this was from New York City, school turns away immigration agent looking for fourth grader. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So this was, I believe it was an ICE agent, Immigration Customs Enforcement, mm-hmm. who were making inquiries, and the school said, no, sorry, you have to go away. They did not have a warrant. So that's, it's a lot of stuff happening there involving the Justice Department. So do you have some bummer offsets for that?
Absolutely. This week, I thought our bummer offsets would be headlines from National Geographic, because it's important to remember that over time, like, scientific knowledge continues to grow, and we keep evolving that way.
All right, I won't share my bad news about National Geographic then.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, it's just a publication and everything is fine. So the first one, and I think many people did hear about this, is that an amazing dinosaur was found by miners in Canada, like the people who are
right,
mining.
not young people who were walking about said, look, it's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
That's what young people in Canada sound like.
It is, eh? This dinosaur known as a nodosaur is 110 million years old. Whoa. And it is so well preserved. You can, like, see his little face. And it's a very, very cool find for the dinosaur lovers out there.
Wow. And glowing writing etched upon its bones.
Yeah. It says, listen to So What Do You Do? The best podcast ever.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is great. The only bad thing about National Geographic is bought by Rupert Murdoch, so they've...
Oh, okay.
That's all. So they haven't dumbed it down too much yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Ready for the other biggie?
Yeah, I'm ready.
And this is, to me, the whole ballgame. The headline is, President Trump expected to launch Commission on Election Integrity.
No.
Yeah, I know. Because basically, the medium-term game is to get people elected who aren't going to allow democratic values, small-d democratic values, to just get flushed down the toilet. And if you're able to continue to suppress votes, then it becomes harder to do that.
So
there's not an immediate consequence to it. It's basically one of these executive orders that in and of itself doesn't have any teeth, but it does signal to those states, and there are many of them, that are propagating different types of voter ID laws, which on their face sound reasonable, but in practice there isn't any evidence suggesting that there is a problem with voter fraud of that sort.
Yeah.
And that even if you were to catch a dozen people, if you disenfranchise, by some estimates, these laws in any given place, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, then it's pretty clear what this is really about. It's not about protecting the integrity of the electoral process. It's simply suppressing votes of people who you don't think are inclined to agree with your point of view.
Yeah.
But there's resistance to it this week as well, and it's in the judiciary. The headline is, U.S. Supreme Court refuses to revive North Carolina voter ID law.
Mm.
So they didn't say, no, it's wrong. They just refused to take up the issue. But the effect is that it has been struck down, and it does... It does put the brakes on it to some extent. At least the floodgates are not open. So what do you got, Angela?
We've got this storm. Are you ready?
I am.
How do you stick a camera on a manta ray? Peanut butter.
You know what? I've thought about condiments as adhesives, but not with aquatic life, because ketchup would just dissolve immediately in salt water.
Yeah, I mean, this is just an example of some researchers. They tried to use suction cups. It didn't work. And they were, like, innovating, overcoming obstacles, tried peanut butter. If you need to stick a camera on a manta ray, and who doesn't these days?
Now, I wonder if manta rays enjoy peanut butter. Like, is that something that...
Oh,
after the job is done, the deal is, okay, Manta Ray, we just need to put a camera on you for a while, but when it's done, you get to eat the peanut butter.
Yeah, I imagine. And they don't get a lot of peanut butter under the sea. Under the sea.
No, Manta Ray aquaculture is not rich when it comes to legumes. They do wonders with gourds, but not legumes.
Yet. Yeah. Are you going to break down some Russia for us, Storm? Is it time?
It is. Now, I basically put this together in the 20 minutes before this episode. And there are so many ins and outs to it and so many little details and terrible little things. But I'm hoping that we've all heard a lot about the things happening and the people involved.
Yeah. And honestly, I've been, it's so hard to know what, because it sounds so much like a conspiracy theory that you kind of immediately tune out. But I know that you read reliable news sources, so I'm really excited to hear what is actually happening.
Yes, exactly. And I'm always asking myself that when I'm looking at this news. Am I that person that I used to laugh at? And especially, and I know the answer is no, but after doing this breakdown, it's most definitely not no. And I'm going to break it down to the very simplest level. I'm going to be leaving out a lot of stuff. My assumption is that no one has heard anything about it, and that's where it's coming from. But as we go along, Angelazer, if something comes up that you have questions about, just peek on it. And like I said, put this together in 20 minutes.
Great. Yeah. And if we need any breaking up, I do have some more National Geographic. So it gets heavy.
You know, we are going to because it's kind of long.
Okay.
Evidence suggests that Donald Trump may be deeply indebted to Russian organizations that are tied to Vladimir Putin. This is financially indebted because Trump was having a very bad time with his business and no American companies would lend him money.
Okay.
This is part of what his tax returns might show and why many believe it's part of why he doesn't want them to be shown.
Oh, okay.
And because it would have to indicate if you had money from foreign interests, what they were, and then that could be traced. Mm-hmm. Now, if this were the case, then Donald Trump's personal interests are likely to be at odds with those of the people of the United States, whose values, at least certainly up until recently, have not aligned with Putin's autocratic Russia. Stuff like killing reporters who are critical of the president and annexing land of other countries through military force, those sort of things that generally they have not been a country we've seen as an ally, in fact, of late an adversary. So that's the big picture and what the big conflict is and why it's a big deal at all.
Yes.
So that if take that as a given. Right.
Okay.
This is all being investigated by three major public and semi-public entities. There's an investigation going on in the House of Representatives, one in the Senate, and one by the FBI. Now, only the FBI has the expertise and resources to actually do the proper investigation. They have the people who know how to do this stuff and resources and people that go out to do these things, and they can issue warrants to conduct raids to get information, all these sorts of things.
Right, whereas Congress can probably just ask people questions.
Yes, they can compel people to testify, but they simply don't have a lot of resources or the expertise, and they rely very much on these investigations that the FBI does.
Okay.
So that's why the FBI is a big deal in this. And the FBI is a part of the Justice Department, which is led by the Attorney General. And currently that's Jeff Sessions. So that's foundational to everything that's happening right now. Okay. I'm going to go back in time. On March 20, which is an eternity ago now.
Oh, geez, yeah.
The FBI director at the time until recently, James Comey, gave public testimony to the House of Representatives investigation in which he confirmed there was an investigation into possible coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign, basically saying, right, we don't know for sure this is happening, but we are looking into it. And it was very rare that you would even acknowledge that sort of investigation.
Yeah, and that's part of it, and I'm sure you're going to get into it, but that you didn't say at the top, like, it's more than just us being friends with Russia. It's that, like, maybe Russia helped Trump cheat himself into winning the election, which
that's
is
correct.
Terrifying.
That's yeah. correct. And it is central to it.
Yeah.
And that, indeed, because of that hacking that was done, and it's agreed that the Russians were attempting to influence the election, that's just been stated people, them that know, that they represented a threat to the United States and a continued threat. It's not past.
Yeah. Because the U.S. is certainly friends with problematic people, like countries and stuff, and Saudi Arabia and stuff like that. And it's not the best, but they don't, like, influence our elections in super illegal ways, hopefully.
Yeah, that's really at the core of our entire country is how we govern ourselves. And if a foreign power has been coordinating with a presidential candidate to short circuit that's pretty serious. Some say it is treasonous to do that.
Yeah. So all right, please continue.
Yes. No. That's great. I'm glad that came up now. James Comey, the FBI director, also flat out dismissed the president's claims about Obama wiretapping him. Mm-hmm. So. That was what Trump really believed the big deal was. Now, shortly after James Comey gave his testimony, the House investigation ground to a halt due to the actions of the ranking member of that committee, Republican Devin Nunes. And I'm not going to get into all the ins and outs of it. What's important is that it got shut down after this very public blockbuster testimony. Okay.
Sort of like the episode of West Wing I watched yesterday.
What happened in that episode?
Well, Leo was about to testify, but then the reporter that Donna is sleeping with figured out what he was going to say, and then he made them shut it down so that they could have, like, a shady backdoor deal about it.
That it's in this sort of – I hesitate just to call it politics, but – the way these things work, it's an effective strategy to shut a thing down. Maybe it'll cool over, people forget about it, and we'll all go about our business, and it'll be cool. So that's exactly what was happening just without the sex scandal.
Yet.
There are other sex scandals, just not directly connected. All right, you ready for the next link in the chain?
I'm so ready.
Okay. Sally Yates, a name you have probably heard, dear listener, she was the acting attorney general before Jeff Sessions was installed by Trump. Mm-hmm. So, she had the chair at the FBI, which was in charge of all of its business, including looking into the Russian hacking of the election and other connections. Now, earlier this week, Sally Yates publicly testified to the Senate that she had warned the president about Michael Flynn's Russia ties and that it would be dangerous to keep him in the inner circle because Michael Flynn was the national security advisor. Basically, the most inner circle gets to see all the secrets. Very few, I don't know enough about it to say for sure, but very few limits on the information would have access to. Yeah. And potentially feeding that information to someone who might be an adversary, say Russia.
Yeah.
So Sally Yates was fired almost immediately thereafter. But the reason that was given was allegedly for failing to defend the Muslim ban. And that was that action that led to the massive public protests at the airports across the country.
Right.
It's likely, this is speculative, that it may have been a bit of both, but after...
They weren't bros. They weren't bros for various reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But Flynn was not fired. He stayed on for quite a few days, and that's part of the big head scratcher.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The day after Sally Yates' testimony, FBI Director James Comey was fired, allegedly to restore the credibility of the FBI, which the administration said had been damaged because of how Comey had handled the Clinton email investigation, which was a real laugher to most of us.
Yeah.
And they were surprised by it. They had thought, oh, yes, they don't like Comey because they blame him for the Clinton thing. Therefore, we can get rid of him and it'll be cool. But it was a complete shock, a complete shock. Hmm. And part of why it's a shock is that FBI directors for the past several decades, I believe, are given 10-year terms in order to ensure that they have a measure of independence, which acts
Oh, so it's not like an appointed position that you generally flip for every administration. It's one that you kind of keep.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And there's no – it is within the president's right to fire that person. It is only political ramifications and the appearance of impropriety that you would fire the person who's responsible for this investigation. In fact, it's come out since the firing. And remember that James Comey, the FBI director, reports to the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, but that he had requested more funding for the Russia investigation because it was entering a more active phase. These are the people out there carrying out the warrants, collecting information, maybe conducting raids, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's also been alleged that Trump was furious with the FBI director earlier because the FBI director refused to pledge loyalty to him and would not brief Trump in advance of that March 20th testimony where he had said that, no, it's BS about the wiretapping, and yes, we're investigating the Russia thing. And Trump's also straight up said on national news that he fired Comey because he wanted to make the Russia investigation go away. So it seems pretty clear cut so far.
Fun diversion, did you know Agent Coulson plays an FBI agent on The West Wing?
I did not know that.
It's fun.
You know, I was never a big West Wing watcher. I don't know. I've always been super progressive and liberal and all that, but I think there was just something about the pacing that did not strike me.
That's fair. Well, if you imagine that it has S.H.I.E.L.D. tie-ins because Agent Coulson's playing the same character, maybe that will make it more exciting to you.
You know what? I'm going to go back and watch it. Mrs. Storm actually did that. She went to the beginning. She had not seen it and watched it clear through and just loved it. So.
Yeah.
Add it to the list, very long list of things that I have not watched.
I will say watching it now, everything that happens is so much less ridiculous than what's happening, what you're describing right now. So,
Right. This is cartoonist. We're in a snow globe. We're in a snow globe right now.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Okay. Just a couple more links here.
All righty.
So now that they fired James Comey, they need a new FBI director.
Mm-hmm.
And this person will have a tremendous influence over the Russia investigation. Of course, it's not conducted directly by the director, but everyone reports to them, and that FBI director can call the shots. It would potentially be within their ability to more or less back burner it, shelve it, let it wither.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the part that is kind of the – well, there's so much that's damning – but the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, to whom the FBI director reports, had recused himself from the Russia investigation, meaning they said that they would not participate, they're walled off, they're not going to step in.
Yeah.
And that was because he lied to the Senate during his Senate confirmation testimony about not having any contacts with Russian agents, the Russians, where he clearly had. And Jeff Sessions, in fact, was deeply involved with the firing of James Comey and is now playing a public role in selecting his replacement. So that's another big head scratcher. Why is someone who said they're not going to be involved with this and who might be a little dirty on it themselves, why are they now stepping up? And that brings us to where we are now.
Wow.
that because of all of these Russian connections in the administration, and I only scratched the surface, there are a lot of people in the administration, currently and former, and the number of times they've lied about those connections, and that includes Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, I think even Ivanka now has some ties. Mm-hmm. And because Trump has shown that he will only appoint people who he believes will be loyal to him, that there has been a growing and now very loud call for an independent investigation. And that means laws exist that a special prosecutor could be appointed who would be removed from political influence, meaning they couldn't be fired except for if there were great cause to do so.
Yeah.
And this is what the Democrats right now are calling for. And so far, there is scant support among Republicans, almost to the point of non-existence, to have that special prosecutor. And that's where we are. And to me, it's mind-numbing that there could be such a split between those Republicans and people who voted for Trump and the rest of us, and that they don't see what the problem is with all of this. And that brings me to the last headline, which is parallel universes, DC freaks, Trump country shrugs. So Angel Laser, how can this be? How do we get here?
Uh-huh.
But that's the back of the envelope of what this is about. What you got for that? What does National Geographic say?
Well, they discovered a pale, beady-eyed crab, and they named it for Harry Potter, because this crab, he was found by this guy who's also named Harry. And this guy's like, his species finding skills border on magical, right? So they named the crab Harryplex Severus. Isn't that great?
that is great. I wonder if that guy's Patronus is a crab.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. That would be cool, mostly because I like to think of all Patronuses as flying through the air and a flying crab.
Well, the constellation Cancer, technically, you could say, flies through the night sky.
That's very true. That's very true. Oh, boy. So is that all we have for What the What this week?
There is, of course, so much more that is happening, but gotta narrow it down. Gotta be bite-sized. Fun size.
Oh, it's so fun. In that case, let's take a quick instrumental break so you can continue to cough and be back with our discussion topic. We're back, and I actually want to go right into listener questions now, Storm, because they both lead into the main thing that I wanted to do our discussion about, which is empathy. So if you could use your voice skills to ask us this first question from John Rudy.
This is a voice that probably does not represent the actual John Rudy.
Okay.
How do you keep from falling into hating supporters of the current administration? How do you exercise your compassion muscles?
That's really good. I like that a lot.
Thanks.
And the next question is pretty much related, so maybe we could go right into that. That's a Gary Fisher question.
Okay, and Gary Fisher asks, probably not in this voice. Mm-hmm. Recently, I felt distinct lack of empathy for folks I don't agree with. That is, anti-vax folks and climate change deniers. I failed to roll my R. This isn't like me. What to do?
It's weird that Gary Fisher can't roll his R's even though he has two of them in his name.
Not all those with R's can roll.
Mm-hmm. So, empathy, Storm. There's a lot to talk about, obviously, but I want to structure it in a specific way. So to kick it off, what does it mean to have empathy?
Yeah. You're asking me?
Yeah. I have my own answer, too, but I want to hear from you because you're very smart.
Ha! Sometimes. About some things. I feel that empathy is being able to understand where another person is coming from. That it doesn't mean that you necessarily agree with their coming from, but that you at least are, you view them as valid and human, even if they have views and beliefs that are different from your own.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I Googled it. Empathy, the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. And I think it's hard because a lot of the time when we're talking about this political situation, especially now, you really don't want to legitimize the views that other people have that are some like straight up hateful and not okay, like the dehumanizing aspect of it.
Yeah, and I do think that you can understand how someone feels without saying it's okay. You can never say it's not okay for someone to feel how they feel. They feel how they feel. But that how it manifests in action, that you can always disagree with.
Yeah.
And I've been feeling this a lot myself, mm-hmm. in that I really believed that, hey, you know, if we just aired out what we are all thinking and feeling here on all sides, we can arrive at a comfortable place for everybody and bust through what clearly is this effort to continually polarize and separate. But that it seems like they're, I don't know what we do when you have some groups of people that do want to do that, and on the other side there's no give.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's been happening for a long time. And
yeah, and that's my next question, which is, should we try to do an empathy, and why? What's the value of it?
Well, I think that it's always important to maintain empathy, because when you don't, then you do end up with solid lines that can't be breached, which leads to conflict because you're no longer valuing the other people. That said, I think of it as it's an internal thing that you hold on to that because it also helps you find the best actions to take. Because if you understand and empathize with the people you disagree with, you're going to skip over the actions that will simply antagonize, which might make you feel good but won't achieve anything. But if you are using that as a compass, as a gyroscope, let's go with that, really as a tool that among all the tools that you have to both to cope, to make better decisions, and ultimately I feel like the win condition for all of us, like I don't, and I hate when I do think of other people as the other, because I think you always have to ask yourself, okay, I'm not happy about how, you know, those people see me in their narrative. You know, if I'm doing that, then shouldn't I have a place and a decent one in my narrative? And that's what makes it so hard, is that you have people that are very content to break off into these sharp tribes. But that empathy, if you think of it as something that is for you and not for the benefit of someone that you might think might be your opponent or the person that has another point of view or trying to achieve a different goal, then I think that helps.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. More of a tool as a way for yourself, as opposed to admitting that other people might be right.
Yeah. And I think if you take the question of right and wrong out of empathy, like it's separate, I think part of it is the people generally have a difficult time understanding their own emotions and how to process them and not be ruled by them. And that's it. But if you are able to do that, then you can have that empathy without it encroaching directly on your thinking. So there's not a direct linkage between, oh, yes, I understand why, you know, those white supremacists are gathering around with torches to protest the removal of a Confederate memorial without saying, and they're right, because why wouldn't they be? Because I understand them now. And ultimately, if you have that empathy, you can get at the root of what the people who disagree, what they really want, and is it's often not what's out in the open and what's stated, and that you can find solutions.
Yeah, and I know there was a big backlash after the election that I want to talk about a little bit, to the idea of we need to empathize with these people to understand this thing that was a big surprise. We need to empathize with people who support the administration, especially when it's not being reciprocated, which I understand.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't feel like, you know, that's the goal isn't simply to empathize with the people that disagree or dehumanize you or directly attack you. But again, if you think of it as a way to cut through the emotional clutter and to understand the perspective in order to come up with the best solutions. So it's not empathizing because you want to be nice or because you don't want there to be conflict, but you're empathizing because it will help you understand it better, the better to solve it.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about this book that I've been reading by sociologist Arlie Hochschild called Strangers in Their Own Land. And basically, she's a Berkeley sociologist who went down to Louisiana during the Obama administration and talked to some folks, basically Tea Party people, about their political views and kind of tried to confront this conundrum that there are these folks that their lives and their jobs have basically, and their country, their area, has basically been ruined by pollution and all of environmental restrictions not being followed or existing, and that you would therefore kind of think that they could be helped by government programs or government restrictions on business, but instead support the other way. And she was trying to find out where this paradox was coming from. And I think that was a bewildering to a lot of people during the election as well, that you can't really understand how people can be so supportive of a person who is supported by white supremacists or has this so strongly xenophobic attitudes surrounding the campaign that are clearly like not Christian and not what you would think people would support. But it is sort of a mystery that she tries to tackle.
Well, I do feel like that it does find its roots in fear, that as terrible as the thing that is causing the damage is, if you are able to set up a fear that is greater, then you can get away with a lot. And I don't mean direct it is sometimes direct existential fear. And I think it's that groups of people can feel like that they are going to be displaced. And I mentioned the white supremacists with their torches. That's a real thing that happened this week. And they flat out said it in their little spiel that, they're not going to be, replaced. And I think that's a general fear. And I think that's a wider topic that we can't get to, but a distrust that if we have a level playing field, that I'm not going to be cheated on and be the one who is disadvantaged.
Sure. And the conclusion that the author comes to in this book is actually has to do with this concept of cutting in line for the American dream, that folks who are like a lower income white people in rural Louisiana have been, working so hard and not doing anything wrong, yet still not achieving the dream that they were hoping for, and also being told constantly that they're kind of the bad guys in the Civil War and racist and stupid by Democrats, and seeing immigrants and people of color that they didn't believe to have existed before, I guess, coming and cutting in line and getting services from the government and not thinking that's right, where then a Trump comes in and tells them that they are the good guys and they're not stupid and they're not losers. And that begins to make sense as a solution.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of empathy, that I can understand that and understand that feeling. But then to take it to that next level and say that, you know, let's talk about immigration, which on its surface you could say, why should people who come here just have all the advantage of this country? And why shouldn't we take that fourth grader and get them the F out of our country? Because, you know, they're breaking the law, and that's all true. But then you have to take a little step back wider and say, well, these people came here for opportunity, and that for decades we accepted that because it was to our benefit. And to now dehumanize them and say, sorry, you know, this one parent has a legitimate claim to be here, but these others, so we're just splitting you up. That's it. That's done. That's the law. And I think that's the empathy gap that is missing, from that other side. So, and that's the question. Is it, if you demonstrate the empathy, is it necessarily going to be reciprocated? And if not, what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that is sort of the thing that I think when you talk about fear and we look at the leaders that we elect that make these choices, I think there has got to be a leader with empathy. You know, like that's the solution has to come from somebody who can be relatable from multiple angles instead of so polarizing, in order to actually bring people closer together and say, like, we all have a goal that is the same, even though uniting in front behind a common enemy is so much more powerful and mobilizing.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree with that. And that, yeah, and somebody who recognized that everybody has a valuable role in this narrative,
yeah.
Even while acknowledging that there are differences in what people want and where people are coming from. But mm-hmm. certainly right now, those that have power do not appear to have that point of view, and that yeah. there are those people who are more deserving and those who are less deserving or don't deserve at all or deserve to die in the case yeah. of some of the views expressed about healthcare, which is, to me, yeah. truly astounding.
Yeah, yeah. I think... And I empathize with, you know, feminist Twitter and, you know, queer Twitter and all these people that I am a member of. And I see the anger and I also want to just be like, well, we'll just wait for all the racists and sexists and homophobes to die. But that's not going to happen because no. it's so passed on and things are so entrenched. It's just we've got to, you know. You got something. Something has to happen, and whether I don't think it's the job of necessarily of marginalized groups to take on the just even the emotional labor of trying to understand the people that hate them. But I think those of us who can shoulder that a little bit, and you know, can try to find the elected officials or run ourselves that can be that uniting factor.
Yeah, no.
Do what we can.
Yeah, and I don't believe that most of the people. I know that the vast majority of people who voted for Trump are not hateful people, except for that very small tip who are the actual neo-Nazis who very much see the world in this very stark and divided way through
yeah.
this racial lens, and that. I think ultimately that should not be forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, we crunched a lot of talk into that little time, and I'm sure we'll come back to it, but I think we should move on to our serving suggestions.
Yeah, these are
for the week.
These are a little lighter and fluffier, souffle-like.
Yeah. The first one is I wrote because this was the first thing I talked about to myself after the election of, like, what can I do? But also, we may have talked about it before, which is just at a low engagement serving suggestions, support, consume, and create media with representation.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, from the little baby kid who reads a kid's book about that has a gay couple in it and then understands that that's how that's okay and that's humans, to the rest of us just supporting people of color and women making more art on a, you know, economic equality level, all of that is super important, and it is still important. So you are doing a good thing if you can consume and support this kind of media. You have some examples here.
Yes, I completely agree with that. You had put down, I've not watched it, I've read it, The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
Which, gosh, when I read it back in college 80 kabillion years ago, it seemed so outlandish and,
yeah. You know, and I know my husband won't watch it right now. I think a lot of people are like very scared of how it makes you feel, because it does feel so real. I will say, and you know, as a person who can kind of get triggered by a lot of the stuff that's in there, it is extremely therapeutic as a show, even though it is very scary and very real. So I would recommend trying it out if you think you can.
Now, where do you find that?
You know, it's, where do you find the show?
Yeah.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Hulu, okay.
Yeah, and they did a smart thing. This is just from a TV perspective, where they put out 4 episodes at once, and now they do them every week, which is cool because I really miss watching shows at the same time as the rest of the world. And most of my favorite shows come out in binges, so I'm glad that this one is something we can all kind of talk about, especially because it is so topical. And it's got, it just got a lot of good stuff going on, and like there's some good like women uniting things that feel very powerful and inspiring. So I like that show a lot.
Well, I'll try to catch up. I don't Hulu, so that's
okay.
That's often such a, not a barrier, but just sort of a thing that there's so many platforms anymore.
Yes.
And needing to adopt the habit of a new platform is energy intensive, but I will attempt to catch up so I can be part of that that community and dialogue.
Yeah.
I have a couple of other suggestions that I think fit thematically.
Yes.
A novel, The Fifth Season by Nora Jemisin.
Is so good.
It is so good. and I'm not going to spoil anything, but it really, it's a fantasy world. I'm not done yet. I'm about two-thirds of the way through.
Oh, gosh.
But it very much explores how different groups of people interrelate, subjugate. I think it's at the heart of a lot of the tribal dynamics that are going on right now. So it sounds like you've read it all the way through. So I could be.
I've read it in the second one, and I want more so bad. But I think it is a non-spoilery thing to say that there's a lot of really amazing representation, including trans characters, that are just dealt with in a beautiful way that I recommend the fifth season super much. Yeah.
And you know, let's just stop right there and get on, go along with to the other serving suggestions.
Absolutely. What you got?
All right. This is low to medium engagement. Remember that whole independent investigation thing?
Yes.
Well, this is such a great time to be calling your representatives and senators. It really does matter. There are some areas of the country where it'd be much harder to ever get your senator representative to get along with it. But if you go to 5calls, that's the number 5calls.org, I think right now, and probably even by the time this is listened to, it'll be at the top of their list. It'll show you the number of your representative and or your senator. It has the words that you can say to those people just right there if you don't want to have to think about it. It makes it so easy, and it's still something that makes, in the aggregate, a big difference. So,
yeah, that's request an independent committee and special prosecutor on the Russia investigation.
Yes,
5calls.org.
Yes,
do it.
And then high engagement. Attend a progressive event or protest. I actually did the day after Comey was fired.
Yeah, I saw.
I was so fired up, and I live a very short way from the White House. Like, I can be at the White House within a half an hour. And a protest was organized, and I joined it. And you can find protests across the country of all sorts dealing with different progressive events and protests at resistancecalendar.org. It's searchable.
Nice.
So wherever you are, you can go. And if you feel like, ah, if you're the type of person who likes to be there, or if you feel compelled. And also it's great because you go there and you'll see other people who are thinking and feeling the same thing that you are. And when you band together, it really reinforces the sense that, yes, this is right to stand up, to speak up, and that it's powerful. It doesn't change things in an instant, but all these things together, it's noticed by the people in power.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, how about that, Storm? Before we get into our final words, I want to say that there are new animals that are casually called forest goblins that look just like Yoda. You can find those on the National Geographic website. They're very cute and have great big eyes. Even cuter than Yoda, I think.
Wow.
And also one of Saturn's moons may have the right stuff to support life, so let's go there.
See, to me, that's part of the whole point, but I know that's because of my internal gearing is just that desire to go, to see what's there. And we gotta keep this planet intact and all of us cooperating just enough to be able to do that. Come on.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think I'm going to make those my final words.
I like it. I'm in. I am in for those final words. Thank you so much for listening to So What Do We Do? Find us on Twitter, Facebook. Submit your questions at ask.fm/SoWhatDoWeDoPod. Tell your friends. Thank you for listening. And good luck.
До свидания.